Greetings, Manatsis. Thanks for joining me for yet another installment of the best current year ever. I am your host, Fascist Lemming. It's been a very exciting week. It's Tuesday for me. You're listening to this on Wednesday. But last night, Monday, September 26th, was the big night we've all been waiting for. The big debate between Trump and Hillary. And I will be mostly covering that for this episode. I'll be highlighting all the stuff I found interesting and, you know, giving a quick little analysis of each clip. I got about 10 clips for you. But first, before I do anything, I just want to thank all my listeners for showing me all the love and support. I appreciate it. Don't forget that I have a YouTube channel. You can find it, Fascist Lemming. I'm also on Twitter, @FascistLemming. That's a great way to contact me. Just send me a tweet or whatever you want to do if you have any questions. But that being said, thanks for all the support. Now let's jump right into this. Before I get to the highlights, I got some good news right before I started recording this. I just barely noticed, but it does appear that Pepe the Frog has been added to ADL's list of hate symbols. Praise be to Keck. That is so funny. And They engage in a lot of mental gymnastics on the ADL's article about Pepe. They're like, well, even though it's not really a white supremacist frog, it is. And I just wanted to read this little bit from their page. Though Pepe memes have many defenders, not least the character's creator, Matt Fury, who has called the alt-right appropriation of the meme merely a phase, the use of racist and bigoted versions of Pepe memes seems to be increasing, not decreasing. Oh, this isn't a phase, buddy. Pepe is ours forevermore. Praise be to Keck. It continues. However, because so many Pepe the Frog memes are not bigoted in nature, it is important to examine use of the meme only in context. The mere fact of posting a Pepe meme does not mean that someone is racist or white supremacist. However, if the meme itself is racist or anti-Semitic in nature, or if it appears in a context containing bigoted or offensive language or symbols, then it may have been used for hateful purposes. So yeah, they're not really saying anything there. They're saying, well, Pepe the Frog's not really a hate symbol, but if it's used by a neo-Nazi white supremacist, then it is a hate symbol. So maybe they're just trying to generate publicity, or maybe, Jason or Jonathan Greenblatt doesn't know what he's doing. That could be the case. Maybe he's a hysterical Skype. You know, all these Skypes, so hysterical lately. But congratulations on my fellow Twitter Nazis. We've made it big once again, getting Pepe officially designated as a hate symbol. So speaking of Skypes, I went to a book club this weekend, Saturday night. And it was amazing because we met in a public place, you know, like a bar and grill, basically. You know, we ate some good food and had some good drinks, and it was decently packed. And we just totally capitalized on this whole Googles and Skypes thing. It's the new thing. I thought it was Googles because if you search European people art into Google, then it shows you a bunch of black people. That's why I thought we were calling our black friends, our black friends. See, I can't believe I said that. Trying to joke. I joked too hard, lost my train of thought. But seriously, I thought we were calling the blacks, the dindus, I thought we were calling them Googles because of this whole situation with the European people art. But it turns out our good friends, the Skypes, who I thought we were calling them Skypes because it rhymes with kikes. But it turns out our friends, the Skypes, have unleashed a new, AI algorithm onto the internet where it will automatically flag hateful comments. You know, like if I say kike or nigger, then I might automatically be flagged instantaneously by this algorithm. So some people have started a drive to start saying Google instead of nigger and Skype instead of kike. Y'all probably already know this by now. But the amazing thing, you know, sure, you're subverting the AI by, you know, using popular terms like Google, you get the point, but you can actually use it in real life for, you know, the same subversive purposes. Like when me and my two Nazis are standing at the bar and I can just as loud as this, I can say, the Skypes did this. And no one notices. If I would have said the Kikes did this, you know, everyone would have looked at me. like they just saw a ghost, right? But the beauty of it is being able to speak freely, and it has this great origin story. Like, why are we using Google? Why are we using Skype? Oh, it's because these kikes are trying to censor us on the internet using this algorithm. But now we've just taken it and gone, you know, crazy with it, having a field day with it. And it's enabled us to speak freely. I mean, we're just speaking freely. It's sitting at a table. You got like five other people sitting at the same table, you know, a few seats down, this kind of thing. And, you know, initially I was uncomfortable with meeting fellow Nazis, you know, in a public place like that, strictly because we could not speak freely. Oh, but we spoke freely. You know, maybe I was being a little paranoid too, but with thanks to this whole Googles and Skypes thing, we could speak freely. And so I just wanted to talk about that real quick. And so, moving on to the big event, the main event, our Super Bowl, the first debate between Hill Dog and President Trump. And I have to say, I was extremely excited. I made sure I was nice and lit as I watched it. I was already lit by the time it started airing. Yeah, maybe that's degenerate, but guess what? I enjoyed that debate to the maximum extent. You know, I went into it expecting Trump to not be mean to Hillary Clinton at all. I expected it to be like one of his teleprompter speeches he's been giving recently, where he doesn't say anything aggressive or combative, and then he like cucks for Google's hardcore. There was the DR3 thing at the debate, but that's to be expected. But I think he actually did good with that, because dropping the hate facts, but I'll get to that. But I thought he did great. He started interrupting her and saying, excuse me, and this kind of thing. And I was like, man, I bet some of our people are gonna like be hand-wringing because he's being too aggressive on her. But I was so wrong, because after the debate, literally everybody I know or listen to or care about their opinion was disappointed, very dissatisfied with Trump's performance. They thought he was too soft on her, and that he missed all these opportunities, and I just couldn't believe it, because I had the time of my life watching this debate. It was so great. So I was kind of blackpilled that everybody else thought he did bad. I was like, what are y'all talking about? He did great. But then it became apparent that literally everybody but me was dissatisfied with his performance in one way or another, you know, to some degree. So today I decided that I would watch it again. And, you know, I will admit, after watching it sober and already having seen it once, and, you know, all the hype, you know, having, you know, dissipated from my body, all the hype was gone. I will say, yeah, it definitely wasn't as epic this time around as it felt the first time watching it. But that being said, he did say some major things that I was really happy about. Once again, I thought he was going to be really nice, so seeing him be mean, you know, I was happy with that, but maybe I was the one with the wrong expectations. But anyway, we're just going to go ahead and get to this first clip. So this is early on in the debate, and I'm just highlighting this. So just pay attention at the beginning about how combative Lester Holt's Google self is to Trump. Let's watch.
To support this.
Well, country. You just opened the next segment.
Well, look, could I just finish? I think I should.
I'm going to give you a chance right here.
And you take a look at her website. She's going to raise taxes $1.3 trillion.
Mr. Trump,
and look at her website. You know what? It's no different than this. She's telling us how to fight ISIS. Just go to her website. She tells you how to fight ISIS on her website. I don't think General Douglas MacArthur would like that
right,
too
the
much.
Next, the next segment, we're continuing
well,
the subject of
Well, at least I have a plan to fight ISIS.
Prosperity.
No, no. You're telling the enemy everything you want to do.
No, we're not.
See, you're
no,
telling the not. Enemy everything we you want to do. No wonder you've been fighting. No wonder you've been fighting ISIS your
folks.
Entire adult life.
Folks,
well, the fact checkers, get
folks,
to work.
You are on.
Now, one of the reasons why I highlighted this clip is because I like how he always talks about OPSEC and how dumb it is that we're telling our enemies what we're going to do and when. Yeah, I don't know if that's because I was in the Army, but I remember when I was in Iraq in January of 2009, and, you know, Obama was inaugurated. And I remember, I think the date might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure this is right. That early, you know, in early 2009, he announced that we were leaving Iraq like on August 31st, 2011. I could be wrong on that date, but I'm pretty sure that was it. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, why is he announcing that we're leaving in, you know, almost 3 years from now. Like, first of all, that doesn't seem practical because anything could happen in 3 years. But yeah, secondly, why are you announcing the exact date? So when Trump came onto the scene and used this as one of his main talking points, that was one of the things that he would say that made him grow on me. And he says, no wonder you've been fighting ISIS your entire adult life. that's not like exactly accurate, right? You get the spirit of what he's saying. Yeah, basically, she's part of the system. You know, it's almost an argument in bad faith to say she's been fighting ISIS her entire life, because we all know that she's basically with the neocons, with the globalist Jewish establishment who wants, you know, endless wars for Israel and, you know, free trade, which means we lose all our job, and flood us with mud people, right? That's what people like Hillary Clinton want. So she wasn't actually necessarily fighting ISIS. She's actually trying to protect ISIS. There was one clip I didn't highlight where she was so eager to talk about Russia and how Russia's an enemy and all this stuff. But it's funny, right before the beginning of the second clip that I'm about to play for you guys, Trump had basically called her a failed politician because she and others can't find a way to get the trillions in offshore money back into the states. You know, apparently all these corporations have money tied up offshore. And just the way he insults her, like, about how she's a failure as a politician. But he was talking about all politicians, but her specifically. And she looks so butthurt. So let's watch it.
All right, you have 2 minutes on the same question to defend tax increases on the wealthiest Americans, Secretary Clinton.
I have a feeling that by the end of this evening, I'm going to be blamed for everything that's ever happened.
Why not?
Why not? Yeah, why not? You know, just join the debate by saying more crazy things. Now, let me say,
hey, there's nothing crazy about not letting our companies bring their money back into their country.
This is Secretary Clinton's 2 minutes, yes. Please.
Yeah, well, let's start the clock again, Lester. But when I look at what you have proposed, you have what is called now the Trump loophole, because it would so advantage you and the business you do. You've proposed an approach that has a $4 billion tax benefit for your family. And when you look at what you are proposing,
how much for my family?
It is, as I said, trumped up trickle down. Trickle down did not work. It got us into the mess we were in 2009.
So yeah, at this point in the debate, it's still early, but it's fairly clear to me that this is probably, you know, I was a kid when she was the first lady, so I might have missed something, but I'm pretty sure this is the worst ever been treated in public. And, you know, this is, you know, one of the most watched televised live events in the history of TV, right? This is like the Super Bowl, basically. And, you know, people say he didn't go far enough, right? But he definitely wasn't nice to her. You know, I actually thought people were going to be complaining once again, but I was wrong. But I think he demonstrated that he is willing to go far in how he attacks her with this debate. Sure, he did miss some opportunities, and I'll get to that later, but he definitely showed to me that he's willing to take the gloves off. I expected him to be on his best behavior, to be honest. So and then she's like, she says something about trumped up, trickle down economics. Like, oy vey, that's such a clever phrase, Goyim. Trumped up, trickle down economics. Oy vey, so clever. It's like the most Jewish phrase I've ever heard. So the next clip, probably my favorite clip of the night, is the most powerful thing President Trump said in the whole debate. So let's watch.
We have the worst revival of an economy since the Great Depression. And believe me, we're in a bubble right now. And the only thing that looks good is the stock market. But if you raise interest rates even a little bit, that's going to come crashing down. We are in a big, fat, ugly bubble. And we better be awfully careful. And we have a Fed that's doing political things. This Janet Yellen of the Fed. The Fed is doing political by keeping the interest rates at this level. And believe me, the day Obama goes off and he leaves and he goes out to the golf course for the rest of his life to play golf, when they raise interest rates, you're going to see some very bad things happen, because the Fed is not doing their job. The Fed is being more political than Secretary Clinton.
Yeah, good stuff right there. I don't know about you, but in my opinion, that is top-tier Jew naming. This is a live event with about 84 million viewers, according to the article I just looked up. 84 million people heard Janet Yellen's name dropped. You know, she's a Jew. She runs the Federal Reserve. So therefore, he mentioned her name. He's naming the Jew. I know he's not one of us, but still, he is naming a Jew. An actual Jewish supremacist who is definitely one of our enemies. She's running the Federal Reserve, which is definitely a major weapon used for white genocide. So he named her on live TV to 84 million people. And then he characterizes the Federal Reserve as a political actor, that they're doing what they're doing for political reasons. You know, that's cool. Ron Paul used to say, you know, abolish the Fed. You know, that sounded hardcore, but he was never going to be able to do anything like that. He had no power. You know, Donald Trump keeps it way more simple. He's like, look, the Federal Reserve isn't doing its job. They're being political. It's corrupt, basically. He didn't say it's corrupt. I'm putting words in his mouth, but it's basically what he's saying. And once again, calling out Janet Yellen by name in the past, he says he's probably going to get rid of her. It's just amazing to me because he didn't have to bring that up. The fact that he's willing to is what's revolutionary to me. Sure, he's not as hardcore as I am or as you are, but he's way more hardcore than anyone we've seen in our lifetime. And that's what matters. So yeah, that was definitely, you know, the best thing. You know, he even said that the Federal Reserve is more political than Hill Dog. And you know what? It's funny because it's true. Hill Dog's a puppet of these Federal Reserve Skypes, right? It's the Federal Reserve, you know, banking system, you know, the money lenders, the money shifters, you know, whatever you want to call them, they're kikes. And, you know, their whole banking system is the foundation of their global power. So it's good to have someone like Trump, who, by the way, wants to build a wall and deport them all. And he's talking about Janet Yellen by name and the Fed. And unfortunately, he did not mention building the wall and deporting them all. But there's two more debates, so I don't want to jump the gun and get mad at stuff he didn't mention. Although he did miss a few opportunities I will be covering shortly. But, you know, a lot of stuff he didn't say this one and this debate, we still have two debates left. So in the next clip, he finally mentions the emails, and this turned out to basically be the only mention of the emails, which a lot of people were, you know, upset about that. He should have mentioned the emails more, and I agree. But this is the one time he did mention it. It's pretty entertaining. Let's check it out.
I will release my tax returns against my lawyer's wishes when she releases her 33,000 emails that have been deleted. As soon as she releases them, I will release my tax returns. And that's against my lawyers. They say, don't do it. I will tell you this. No, in fact, watching shows, reading the papers, almost every lawyer says, you don't release your returns until the audit's complete. When the audit's complete, I'll do it. But I would go against them if she releases her
email. So it's negotiable?
It's not negotiable. No, let her release the email. Why did she delete 33,000
emails? Well, I'll let her ask that, but let me just admonish the audience one more time. There was an agreement. We did ask you to be silent, so it would be helpful for us. He also raised the issue of your emails. Do you want to respond to that?
I do. You know, I made a mistake using a private email.
That's for sure.
And if I had to do it over again, I would obviously do it differently. But I'm not going to make any excuses. It was a mistake, and I take responsibility for that.
Mr. Trump?
That was more than a mistake. That was done purposely. Okay, that was not a mistake. That was done purposely. When you have your staff taking the Fifth Amendment, taking the Fifth, so they're not prosecuted. When you have the man that set up the illegal server taking the Fifth, I think it's disgraceful. And believe me, this country thinks it's disgraceful also.
So yeah, I really like how he called her out on the emails. You know, it basically blindsided her. They're talking about his taxes, which none of us care about. Guaranteed no one cares about his taxes. But he just brings it out and he points at her like, yeah, as soon as she releases those emails, he's the top troll. And it's funny because no one cares about his taxes and no one cares about her deleted emails. But, you know, it was great to watch him call her out as a literal criminal, talking about how her people were pleading the Fifth and this kind of thing. She's never been treated like this. She's never been called out like this. This is history, man. Because she is the most corrupt candidate ever, as Donald Trump tweeted with the Star David in her face above a pile of cash. Those were good times, right? Best current year ever. So, yeah, the next clip is just really short. It's one of my favorite jokes from Donald.
But what she doesn't say is the tens of thousands of people that are unbelievably happy and that love me. I'll give you an example. We're just opening up on Pennsylvania Avenue, right next to the White House. So if I don't get there one way, I'm going to get to Pennsylvania Avenue another. But we're opening the old post office.
Oh, yeah, man. That's too good, right? I love that joke because he's basically saying, hey, if you screw me out of this election, you know, if you drew me over, guess what? I'm going to be right down the street anyway in my hotel, which might be a hotel, might be a headquarters for when I throw a coup on this corrupt government that's been infiltrated by Skypes. You never know, but that's just a funny thought. It's a joke, of course, but the fact that he makes a joke in the first place, it's like he's hinting at the possibility. Like he says, one way or another, I'm going to wind up on Pennsylvania Avenue. I just think that's great. All right, so the next clip. Trump highlights how dangerous it is in muddy neighborhoods and starts dropping hate facts about Chicago. Check it out.
You walk down the street, you get shot. In Chicago, they've had thousands of shootings, thousands, since January 1st. Thousands of shootings. And I'm saying, where is this? Is this a war-torn country? What are we doing? And we have to stop the violence. We have to bring back law and order. In a place like Chicago, where thousands of people have been killed, thousands over the last number of years. In fact, almost 4,000 have been killed since Barack Obama became president. Almost 4,000 people in Chicago have been killed. We have to bring back law and order. Now, whether or not in a place like Chicago you do stop and frisk, which worked very well, Mayor Giuliani is here, it worked very well in New York, it brought the crime rate way down, but you take the gun away from criminals that shouldn't be having it. We have gangs roaming the street, and in many cases, they're illegally here, illegal immigrants, and they have guns, and they shoot people. And we have to be very strong, and we have to be very vigilant. We have to know what we're doing. Right now, our police, in many cases, are afraid to do anything. We have to protect our inner cities because African American communities are being decimated by crime.
Your 2 minutes has expired, but I do want to follow up. Stop and frisk was ruled unconstitutional in New York because it largely singled out Black and Hispanic young men.
No, you're wrong. It went before a judge who was a very against police judge. It was taken away from her, and our new mayor, refused to go forward with the case. They would have won an appeal. If you look at it, throughout the country, there are many places where
the argument is that it's a form of racial profiling.
No, the argument is that we have to take the guns away from these people that have them and that are bad people that shouldn't have them. These are felons. These are people that are bad people.
But we do always have to make sure we keep people safe. There are the right ways of doing it, and then there are ways that are ineffective. Stop and frisk was found to be unconstitutional, and in part because it was ineffective. It did not do what it needed to do.
And when it comes to stop and frisk, you know, you're talking about taking guns away. Well, I'm talking about taking guns away from gangs and people that use them. And I really don't think you disagree with me on this, if you want to know the truth. I think maybe there's a political reason why you can't say it, but I really don't believe in New York City, stop and frisk. We had 2,200 murders, and stop and frisk brought it down to 500 murders. 500 murders is a lot of murders. Hard to believe 500 is like supposed to be good, but we went from 2,200 to 500, and it was continued on by Mayor Bloomberg, and it was terminated by current mayor. But stop and frisk had a tremendous impact on the safety of New York City, tremendous beyond belief.
So yeah, you know, I understand Trump's engaging in this DR3, Democrats are the real racists, and you know, he's being cucky, you know, he's willing to talk about the suffering, about, you know, the the Google Americans and the Yahoo Americans and how they're suffering from all this gun crime. And he doesn't mention whites, of course. That's okay. That's what he has to do. But the fact remains that he is dropping hardcore hate facts about Chicago. Like, you know, a couple thousand kills since Obama was elected. Talking about black-on-black crime. That's even something a lot of these DR3 conservatives, they don't really talk about that. Or I don't know, maybe they do. Maybe that is why it's so DR3. But it's still a hate fact, right? It's definitely still a hate fact to talk about these things. Because according to the Skype media, the only time a black person is hurt is when it's by a white cop or a white racist. So, I mean, it's cool. And, the best part is when he tells her he thinks she actually agrees with him on stop and frisk, but is only pretending to disagree for political reasons. That's one of the funniest things he says. He's like, yeah, you're lying. You don't really think that. You agree with me. You're just lying because your handlers want you to lie. That is so great, man. That made me laugh so hard when he said that. So, next clip, once again, while Trump did fail to drive the email scandal home, they're asked about cybersecurity, and this was his perfect opportunity to bring up the emails again. But he failed to do that. But he did take the time to say that Russia isn't our enemy, which is very important because we don't want to go to war with Russia because we'll get our asses kicked, and it won't be pretty. And it won't even be worth it, the reason why we're fighting them in the first place. It's not like, oh, we have a good reason to fight Russia, but we shouldn't because they'll beat us down. No, it's like they'll beat us down and we have a very bad reason for going. The bad reason being, our government's been infiltrated by Skypes and, there's the white traders who kiss their butts all day, all the opportunists and all these people. So it'd be the worst of both worlds. Okay, so later on in the debate, Lester Holt asked them both about cybersecurity, and this was a great opportunity for Donald Trump to either bring up her email situation or what she did with Libya, especially the email thing, though. And, even though it is disappointing that he didn't take this opportunity with this cybersecurity question to, drive home once again her email scandal, he did take the time to stress that, Russia is not our enemy. And then not only that, he names yet another Jew, one of our favorites, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And while discussing the fact that the DNC leaks exposed Hillary's corruption. So let's check out the clip.
As far as the cyber, I agree to parts of what Secretary Clinton said. We should be better than anybody else, and perhaps we're not. I don't think anybody knows it was Russia that broke into the DNC. She's saying Russia, 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 but I don't, maybe it was. I mean, it could be Russia, but it could also be China. It could also be lots of other people. It also could be somebody sitting on their bed that weighs 400 pounds, okay? You don't know who broke into DNC, but what did we learn with DNC? We learned that Bernie Sanders was taken advantage of by your people, by Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Look what happened to her. But Bernie Sanders was taken advantage of. That's what we learned. Now, whether that was Russia, whether that was China, whether it was another country, we don't know. Because the truth is, under President Obama, we've lost control of things that we used to have control over.
Yeah, it really is funny how she tries to blame Russia for the DNC leaks while totally ignoring the fact that the DNC leaks exposed all this corruption and shenanigans in her campaign. That's just funny to me. So, next clip. Hillary makes the boldest accusation of the night.
Wrong. We actually advocated for the actions we took in Libya and urged that Gaddafi be taken out after actually doing some business with him one time.
So yeah, it sounds like she's implying that Trump advocated for, the takeover of Libya and Gaddafi's, ultimate assassination after doing a business deal with them. And that's funny, but who knows if that's true or not. I have seen a clip where Donald Trump did seem like he was for the invasion of Libya.
I can't believe what our country is doing. Gaddafi in Libya is killing thousands of people. Nobody knows how bad it is. And we're sitting around. We have soldiers all over the Middle East. and we're not bringing them in to stop this horrible carnage. And that's what it is. It's a carnage. You talk about all of the things that have happened in history. This could be one of the worst. Now, we should go in. We should stop this guy, which would be very easy and very quick. We could do it surgically. Stop him from doing it and save these lives. This is absolute nuts. We don't want to get involved. And you're going to end up with something like you've never seen before. Now, ultimately, the people will appreciate it. They're going to end up taking over the country eventually. But the people will appreciate it, and they should pay us back. But we have to go in to save these lives. These people are being slaughtered like animals. It's horrible what's going on. It has to be stopped. We're making decisions like trade embargoes. What does this have to do with a trade embargo? He's killing people with machine guns in the streets. We should do, on a humanitarian basis, immediately go into Libya, knock this guy out very quickly, very surgically, very effectively, and save the lives. After it's all done, we go to the protesters who end up running the country. They're going to like us a lot better than they will if we don't do it. More importantly, we're going to save lives. And we should then say, by the way, from all of your oil, we want reimbursement.
But you can tell right now, that's all a disaster. You know, these days he's saying that Merkel's a traitor to Germany, she's going to get overrun, and that she's destroyed Europe with the migration. So maybe he said something 5 years ago. I don't really care. See, he's a berserker rogue. So basically, even if he was part of the establishment, which I guess he mostly was, he reached the point where he snapped because he was tired of watching our country being overrun by mud people. And maybe he doesn't want his Jewish grandchildren growing up in a country, you know, full of low agency, worthless muds. Maybe, I'm just saying. So he's gone berserker rogue. So what matters is what he's saying now, at least in my opinion. I don't know. That's some hard Trump tardism. I know. Thanks for bearing with me, guys. But I do want to criticize that he didn't use this opportunity, you know, when she accuses him of, you know, being in favor of what happened in Libya. He didn't use his opportunity to highlight the fact that she's totally responsible for what happened in Libya. And I also have to criticize him for not mentioning the fact that Omar Mateen's jihad daddy was literally sitting behind her at one of her rallies. Like, that's a great point. You know, Pence brought it up when they tried to make him call David Duke deplorable. You know, Trump should have had that ready to go for a time like this. It was like a perfect opportunity. You know, Lester Holt's asking him, so what should we do about all this homegrown terrorism? And, you know, first of all, I was expecting Trump to say, well, they're pouring in and we need to cut off the immigration. But instead of that, he just talks about how, you know, ISIS was created thanks to Hillary. He could have just said, we need to cut out the borders. And by the way, Omar Mateen's dad was at one of her rallies. So that's probably my biggest kvetch at Donald Trump's debate performance. So in my final highlight, Trump gets what appears to be the most triggered for the whole debate.
And one of the worst things he said was about a woman in a beauty contest. He loves beauty contests, supporting them and hanging around them. And he called this woman Miss Piggy. Then he called her Miss Housekeeping because she was Latina. Donald, she has a name.
Where did you find
her? Her name
is
Alicia Machado.
Where did you find her?
And she has become a U.S. citizen, and you can bet she's going to vote this November.
Okay, good. Let me just tell you.
Mr. Trump, we're going to take 10 seconds, and then we're going to have the final question.
Hillary is hitting me with tremendous commercials. Some of it said in entertainment. Some of it said somebody who's been very vicious to me, Rosie O'Donnell. I said very tough things to her, and I think everybody would agree that she deserves it, and nobody feels sorry for her. But you want to know the truth? I was going to say something extremely rough to Hillary, to her family, and I said to myself, I can't do it. I just can't do it. It's inappropriate. It's not nice. But she spent hundreds of millions of dollars on negative ads on me, many of which are absolutely untrue. They're untrue and they're misrepresentations. And I will tell you this, Lester, it's not nice. And I don't deserve that. But it's certainly not a nice thing that she's done. It's hundreds of millions of ads. And the only gratifying thing is I saw the polls come in today. And with all of that money, over $200 million is spent. And I'm either winning or tied. And I've spent practically nothing.
Yeah, see, I just think he was triggered because he's like, oh, I was going to say something. Ooh, I had something to say. I was so triggered. Ooh, I was fixing the BTFO, you hill dog. But I looked at the polls and we're either tied or I'm winning. So forget about it. Forget about it. I am curious what he was going to say. I think some people speculated that he was going to say something about Monica Lewinsky. I hope that's not it. I hope it's something bigger than that. If it's just some comment about Monica Lewinsky, I will be extremely disappointed. And in one of the interviews he did after the debate, he hinted that he might have to mention what he was planning on saying in the next debate, depending on Hillary Clinton's behavior. So in review, I think the debate went well. It wasn't as epic and flawless as it felt last night when I watched it, but I still think it was pretty good. Sure, he didn't do perfect. He could have mentioned Libya. He could have mentioned Omar Mateen. He could have mentioned the emails more. But look at it this way. Lester Holt wasn't going to mention the emails, so Donald Trump took the initiative. He should have taken it more, definitely, but at least he took it at all. I'm sure he's reading these criticisms, maybe not mine specifically, but he's reading the criticisms just like we thought he was going soft on immigration. And then he turns around and gives the most epic immigration speech you've ever heard in your life. So hopefully he pays attention to our criticisms and goes like totally full retard at the next debate. I can't wait. I can't wait for the next debate. I think it's going to be better than this one was. Well, all right, guys, that about wraps it up for this week's Best Current Year Ever updates. I do want to highlight something real quick. David Duke, you know, my hero, the world's leading white supremacist, he left a tweet with a meme created by my fellow Nazi Nerzron at the Daily Stormer forums. And he used the phrase, "The best current year ever to stand up, white man." So it's like that face when you've been noticed by senpai, which basically means like someone you look up to noticed your efforts. He used my slogan. You know, Saturday was a big day for him when he went out and defended our heritage at the Andrew Jackson statue. He protected him from a bunch of Googles. It was a Google brigade. If you haven't seen it, I've made a pretty nice video about it on Saturday that has all the highlights and everything. So check out my channel once again. So thanks a lot, everybody, for listening. Leave me a comment. Let me know how you feel or what you think about what I'm saying. And no matter what else you do in life, keep it white.